there will be an intentional focus to, again, make sure that we are not just exposing underrepresented communities to energy careers and saying, hey, come one all, but also providing on-ramps of support and removing some of the barriers that they may find of not knowing the ropes, not knowing how to get into energy jobs, looking at mentorship programs, et cetera. So lots of work taking place in this area, and I think work that is really instrumental as we look at building that skilled and diverse energy workforce.
Welcome to Electric Perspectives, a podcast that explores how America's electric companies are working to deliver the reliable, affordable, secure, and clean energy that powers our economy and our everyday lives. The show is brought to you by EEI, the Edison Electric Institute, which represents all U.S. investor-owned electric companies. I'm your host, Brian Reel. The Center for Energy Workforce Development, or CEWD, is committed to developing a skilled, diverse workforce for a clean energy future. The organization unites EEI's member electric companies, organized labor, and other key industry stakeholders to make sure we're all prepared for the skills needed for the clean energy transition. On today's show, EEI's Senior Vice President, Chief Diversity Officer, and Chief Human Resources Officer, Courtney Peterson, will lead a conversation with CEWD Executive Director, Missy Henriksen, during which they'll discuss trends in workforce development, how companies are preparing the next generation workforce, resources that CEWD offers to help companies enhance their workforce development programs, and more. Courtney, it's great to have you join us again, and I'll pass the mic to you.
Thank you, Brian. It's great to be here. Missy, it's so wonderful to welcome you to the show. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Courtney. Appreciate it.
So for those who may not know about the Center for Energy Workforce Development, or CEWD, as we affectionately call it, can you provide an overview of your membership and the work that your organization does?
Sure, Courtney. Thanks for the question. So CEWD's main purpose is to support the development of a skilled and diverse energy workforce. You know, we were first started in 2006, and I often think that we were started without really knowing for this moment in time, because workforce development has obviously become such a big challenge within the industry and certainly beyond the industry as well. We work with about 140 energy companies, including utilities and contractors. We also work with labor and educators and workforce systems. And together, we're really pooling all of our knowledge and thoughts and needs to work on the people part of the energy transition. And then, of course, in addition to all of the individual companies with which we work, we are also supported by 10 national organizations, including EEI. Really grateful for your support. And we really serve as the workforce development arm of those organizations. Lately, we found that our membership base is expanding to include more companies beyond utilities and contractors, as we really have found that it's important to work together as an entire ecosystem. So we work together on bringing greater visibility to energy careers, to support the development of more diverse, equitable, and inclusive workplaces, supporting development of people for increasingly dynamic and technical energy careers. And then our fourth goal is the famous everything else goal, and that is how we support workforce development professionals with the education they need, the networking data. And lately, we've been expanding a little bit more into education on workforce development as it relates to policy. So certainly lots going on, and I think it's appropriate because workforce development has become an urgent priority within the industry.
Well, that's a great segue to my next question, Missy. Thank you for all of that. As you know, EEI's membership includes investor-owned electric companies. So, of course, workforce development is a huge priority for EEI member companies. And we know that many companies are recruiting students or young professionals for their workforce development programs. And this could include high school STEM programs, infrastructure academies, and line worker training programs. Why is there such a focus on building this energy talent pipeline? Is there a shortage in the labor market that we need to be focusing on?
Yes, there is a huge shortage in the labor market. Probably in our everyday lives, we see this. Your favorite coffee shop may have reduced their hours. Places that used to be full service restaurants, you may have to go pick up your own pizza from the counter, whatever it may be. There's just a shortage of people. According to most estimates, it looks like if every person who was able to work in America was to go to work, we would still have a shortage of 4 million jobs that were unfilled. When you start looking at the reasons behind that, I think one of the largest reasons is immigration. Between, I think it's 2016 and 2021, or roughly thereabouts, a 76% decline in the number of individuals coming into the country. So that's a lot of people who are doing jobs that aren't here to do some of the work. And then you add the gig economy, which has been attractive to so many people for the flexibility it can offer. We've lost a lot of people in the traditional workforce to gig jobs. And then also COVID, there were, I think, about 3 million people who decided to exit the workforce before they initially intended to. And so I think that has created the pressure that so many businesses feel. Within the energy industry, the rate of growth of the workforce was 3.8% last year. And that compares to 3.1% growth in the general workforce. So we're feeling it across the country, but particularly in the energy industry. Then you take that data of where we are now, how we got here, and you start looking at the what's next. According to all of the IRA, CHIPS, bill funding, they're estimating that we will need to hire 19 million jobs in the industry over the next 10 years just from increased opportunity. And then you look at just traditional and expected retirement-based attrition and attrition. And when you add those numbers in, we're looking at an industry that can expect to hire and train 23 million people in 10 years' time. And again, this goes back to what we were just saying earlier. This is why the conversation around workforce development and what organizations need to be focusing on in this space has really become an urgent priority. It's no longer, hey, HR, go get us some people. It really has to become more of a company and corporate-wide strategy.
Absolutely, Missy. Clearly, those numbers speak volumes in terms of the urgency of the topic. Would love to hear from you about some of the new and exciting things that are in the pipeline related to workforce development.
There are a tremendous number of ways that individuals, companies, educators are all really rallying together to hear and respond to the opportunities that exist as we look at the people side of the energy transition. So a couple things that I'll just highlight here. First of all, new partners in the space, big philanthropy. A lot of philanthropic organizations want to be part of the solutioning as it relates to how do we attract the workforce? How do we make sure communities of people who have been historically underrepresented in the industry understand the opportunities that exist and can take advantage of the career on-ramp paths to support energy careers? They would like to support educators who may need more teacher education. They may need equipment to be able to teach the latest and the greatest with some of the evolving and new and emerging energy technology. So we've got some new partners there who are looking to industry to say, what do you need and how can we help? Another thing that we are focused on for this year is the opportunity for energy to finally have a career cluster within the education system. That may be new language for many. So the high level overview there is right now there are 16 different clusters that define how students learn in the American education system. They've been around for about 25 years, but obviously the jobs that exist have dramatically changed in that time period. So energy has never had its own cluster, which can make it difficult for energy to make its way into the education system. I think finally, we can see, hopefully in 2024, possibly into early 25, we will finally see energy have what we would say is its rightful place as a career cluster, which will make it much easier for students to have visibility into the wide-ranging opportunities in energy. With that, we have created our new Energy Industry Fundamentals Curriculum. Courtney, it's a 120-hour program that I think you are very familiar with, but it's designed to connect learners, particularly in high school and post-secondary institutions, and even community-based organizations are now looking at teaching this program. It really is designed to create some kind of a spark with students, whether they are pursuing their GED or PhD. We want them to see where their opportunities may be in the energy industry, from engineering to skilled trade roles to cybersecurity. So that's been a great way in anticipation of the career cluster coming to be able to have curriculum ready. We're super excited that DOE is interested in having the curriculum translated into tribal languages to enable the curriculum to get more readily accessible into tribal communities. communities and tribal colleges. We're looking at translating it into Spanish. And even the Department of Corrections is interested in having EIF brought into the nation's prison system to help prepare those who are serving, look for what their opportunities may be once they leave the prison system. Lots of other things, and I'll just mention in quick highlight, registered apprenticeship programs, a huge part of the workforce conversation as we look at new and emerging areas of energy technology. We've seen a lot of companies who historically have not widely embraced RAPs starting to do so because of tax credits, because of opportunities to participate and apply for grant funding. Lots of work we're doing in the career awareness space. We hope to make some major announcements in that area soon, designed to bring big voices into promoting career awareness. And then some wonderful partnerships with organizations like the National Urban League, UNIDOS, to really help expand visibility of energy careers to communities that are underrepresented in the industry today. So you asked an open-ended question, lots of work in play there, but again, things that we think will really help move the needle to develop that skilled, diverse energy workforce.
Missy, that's really fantastic. It makes me think about what are the possibilities for an industry to work together, collaboratively, united. And what does that mean to you at CEWD, and how can that be strengthened?
Courtney, it's a great question and a very timely question as well. When CEWD was first formed, we really were created to support the needs of utilities. Over time, we added contractors to the mix. More recently, CEWD's board has recognized the importance of working as an ecosystem within the energy industry. We can only be as strong as the weakest link because there's such a codependency on the various businesses that support the sector. So from CEWD's perspective, we're agnostic when it comes to power generation sources. We recognize we need electric, nuclear, natural gas, solar, wind to all be part of the ecosystem. And we need a workforce in all of those different areas. But even beyond that, we need strength within the manufacturing community. We need strength within those who are involved with energy efficiency, new types of contractors. So we want to make sure that we are speaking with collective language. We're not us versus them. We are all part of the energy ecosystem. And so CEWD has really expanded its sandbox recently to make sure we are uniting the industry as a whole so we can collectively represent the jobs that exist and we can work together and moving the needle to ensure the best and the brightest find opportunities within the sector.
Thank you. I'd love to talk a little bit more specifically about the clean energy transition and the ways in which electric companies are engaging in that work. Electric companies are deploying more clean energy as they work to help reduce emissions economy-wide, and they are also preparing for the next generation of workers who will build, maintain, and operate clean energy infrastructure. So how does the clean energy transition impact the overall energy job market, Missy? And what kinds of clean energy jobs do you expect that will be in demand as we move forward?
Courtney, really important question. And I guess this is kind of the crystal ball outlook of what's moving forward. I think a lot of the jobs that have been legacy positions in the industry will still be some of the most significant roles we need to fill for, but there will be increased demands on those positions. So for instance, electricians, we cannot hire enough electricians, but I think there will be some upskilling, some new opportunities for electricians. For instance, as we look at the electrification of transportation, a lot of the jobs associated in that space aren't necessarily completely new jobs where we're starting with a blank sheet of paper. Electricians have an incredibly important role in that space, but there will be new skill sets, and there are new skill sets that electricians will need to use. Welders is another job that we continue to hear. We need a lot more welders, and those positions go across the industry in terms of what employers need those positions filled. You know, we hear about them obviously in the natural gas industry, in the nuclear industry, in electrical facilities, but I will tell you that transformer manufacturers also need welders, and we certainly know there's a shortage of transformers now. So the opportunity to, again, more broadly promote opportunities that exist in the industry. Engineers, another big position that we need of any kind, civil, mechanical, nuclear. We need all of the above when it comes to engineers. Technicians, another one size fits all. We need anyone whose job title includes the word technician. Those technical thinkers, the industry, as you well know, it's a technical business. And so anyone who's gifted with the ability for thinking innovatively, thinking creatively, problem solvers, all of those kinds of individuals are going to be in high demand in the industry. And the last position I would point to is anyone in the cyber and IT space, other areas that I think we'll continue to see increased hiring demand for. But lots of opportunity going back to that 23 million. We need lots of different folks who can bring their skill sets to help us build and engineer the workforce for the future.
So many exciting opportunities, Missy. So I want to explore some of the nuts and bolts of workforce development. And so, you know, as companies assess their workforce development strategies, what are some of the key internal organizational teams that should be involved in that conversation?
So, Courtney, this is changing a lot. I joked earlier that, you know, it used to be, hey, HR, please go hire us some bodies. It's not that way anymore. We are seeing companies that have really done some significant work to develop strategic workforce planning practices and bringing in cross-functional teams within organizations. So obviously, HR, key and fundamental as we look at workforce development. Other players in this space would be the diversity teams, legal teams, government relations teams, because there's a significant amount of funding available for workforce development activities. So those in the government relations public policy side may be the ones to work with workforce development boards or take advantage of federal funding that exists for some of the workforce needs that are taking place. We are seeing more organizations involve their philanthropic teams. Those who are doing grant making within communities often have a really good pulse on what's happening within the community, what organizations may be good talent development funnels for organizations that are looking to expand the diversity of their workforce. Workforce planning teams, those that are looking at data analytics and who can be expected to, you know, retirement numbers, whatever it may be, legal teams. Those are just some of the different groups. I feel like I'm leaving out some of my favorite children in this equation. There's, you know, probably 20 different groups that we would recommend be considered for inclusion. I also should bring operations into play here because they are really looking at the business needs of what they can expect from their teams. Courtney, we have recently, as you know, published a new workforce primer that is designed to explain what workforce development is. And it gives a lot of recommendations on who should be at the table, some of the different things companies should be considering. So for anyone that would like to dig a little deeper into the different teams that should be involved, I would recommend that as recommended reading.
Missy, I agree. I strongly encourage our listeners to download the primer because I think that it does a really wonderful job of explaining who should be at the table and what the conversations could look like. And so could you give a little bit of a highlight for us of some of the key components of a strong workforce development strategy, like a couple of things that must be included in that?
Absolutely. First of all, they have to be employer-led. There's some wonderful and well-meaning partners in our industry that want to be leaders, but we really need employers to be driving the bus here and saying, these are the kind of jobs that we are going to be hiring for. That has to be the first area of consideration in working with educational partners or community-based organizations, because however we're training people, there needs to be a job at the end of the pipeline. So employers need to be leading, but they need to be working with some of the groups I just mentioned, educational institutions, labor organizations, community-based organizations, economic development organizations. So you're looking at expected hiring need and making sure that the pipeline is there to support the development of those individuals, whether it is through pre-apprenticeship programs that are developed, whether it's workforce boards that can help with recruitment fairs. They will provide wraparound support services to allow people who may be ready to work, but may need some additional support with childcare or transportation. They've got to be integral partners in there as well. Well, working with, I mentioned CBOs, those are the organizations that can also help with some of the pre-apprenticeship training to make sure people are coming into programs ready for interviews. They've got some of the fundamental skill sets that they might have not gotten through their education, that they really are being kind of refamiliarized with what it might take to get into energy jobs. And then looking at building those sustainable partnerships that will really endure over time. And that would include working with economic development partnerships as well. I think there's a lot to be said that workforce development is very closely aligned with economic development within communities, making sure that all people have access to good jobs so individuals can be self-supporting and also support their families as well.
Excellent. Missy, we've covered so much territory in a short time, and I really appreciate all that you've shared with our listeners. As we close out, I would love to hear what CEWD is doing to support continued diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts in the energy industry, while also recognizing the need for a nuanced approach. And I also know that you are planning a significant convening coming this May related to DE&I. So we'd love to hear about that too.
Thanks for that question. So I'll start with the latter of what you mentioned. We are holding our DE&I forum on May 9th and 10th in Washington, D.C. This is the second such convening that we've hosted, and they were both born out of our DE&I roadmap for industry change, which is a great resource for companies that are looking at what's next in their DE&I journey. The convening will bring together senior leaders in the DE&I space for an action-oriented agenda. It is a absolutely fantastic lineup of presenters. And Courtney, I'll thank you for your leadership role there. I know you've been serving on the steering committee, and chief diversity officers from a variety of different kinds of organizations have really put together an incredible lineup of sessions. And these are all being led by my colleague, Cornell Johnson, who is our director of DE&I. So May 9th and 10th, if you're in the DE&I space within energy, I would certainly recommend you put this on your agenda. We'd love to see you there for an action-focused agenda. Some of the other work we're doing in the DE&I space, and I may have alluded to a couple of these things through the course of our conversation today, but I'll give a little bit more focus on some of these as we're really excited about the development of what's taking place. First of all, we have entered into a multi-year partnership with the National Urban League to create pre-apprenticeship programs in select communities that will help people be more successful in their pursuit of registered apprenticeship programs. We are working specifically with people of color and also focus on women in some of those programs. We are getting ready to launch a program with UNIDOS, which is very similar to the National Urban League, but works with the Latino community, that would replicate some of the work we've been doing with NUL. Again, preparing people in select community in partnership with energy employers for opportunities that exist, and also Goodwill. We are looking at some new opportunities there. They have a wonderful program that's free of charge that will allow people to be trained as EVSE technicians. So as we look at the electrification of transportation, they've developed a program with Charger Help and Accenture to offer this training to really help expedite the people part of the electrification of transportation. Our energy industry fundamentals curriculum that I mentioned earlier, we expect 500,000 students to complete that over the next 10 years. And we are intentional in our work to make sure that the curriculum is getting into the hands of students who may not have a friend or family member working in the industry today. National Urban League is interested in developing a train the trainer program. So their 92 affiliates across the country can help the clients with whom they work get more familiar with energy and the jobs that exist here. We will be working on some of the career awareness program that I mentioned earlier. And there will be an intentional focus to, again, make sure that we are not just exposing underrepresented communities to energy careers and saying, hey, come one all, but also providing on-ramps of support and removing some of the barriers that they may find of not knowing the ropes, not knowing how to get into energy jobs, looking at mentorship programs, et cetera. So lots of work taking place in this area, and I think work that is really instrumental as we look at building that skilled and diverse energy workforce.
Wow. Missy, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. This was really fantastic. For those who are interested in learning more about CEWD or perhaps following your work on social media, where can we find you online?
We have two websites for people interested in more on CEWD and some of the resources that I mentioned, such as the DE&I Roadmap for Change or the Energy Workforce Primer or even our new Workforce Blueprint. Those can all be found on CEWD.org. And then we also have a site for those that are interested in learning more about energy jobs. So anyone who is working in the industry today who would like to see how we're promoting energy jobs, that information can be found on our consumer site, which is getintoenergy.org.
And that's our show for today. Thank you for listening, and come back next week to hear more from experts and industry leaders who are talking about the innovative ways electric companies are building a cleaner, smarter, stronger energy future for the customers and communities they serve. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Podbeam, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Electric Perspectives. I'm your host, Brian Real. Thanks for listening.